Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
Now funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me. Tell me what's wrong.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Hello, Northbank Saxon Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. We got Ricky on the board. We have S&P futures down 9, NASDAQ futures down 24. After a big move up yesterday, after a down week last week. We can't have down weeks. Come on. We've got the we're moving on up here. We're pouring money in. We want this propped up for everybody. Everybody has all that stuff, which is fine. It's good for my clients, good for me until one day. But that day comes, I think I'm gonna try and be ready, so we won't lose very much. And that would be the idea. We will see on that. Do we have Professor Carl?
You do.
How are you, bud?
Well, you know, I'm extraordinarily annoyed this morning because...
You're always annoyed.
Well, I know, but you know, but today is an extra annoyance day because it does appear that we're going to have to find something else to talk about on Friday other than the jobs report.
Shutdown.
Yeah, you know, and this is actually kind of interesting because the BLS has come out and said, oh, by the way, not only are we not going to compile it and release it on Friday, even though, as I'm sure you know, all the work's already done.
You do realize that we're moving towards nobody getting any information coming from this White House. We got rid of money supply. That was Biden. Now we're getting rid of... we're going to do what corporate earnings, every half year...
Well, maybe
you can't put bad news out there, bud. You know that.
Well, maybe corporate news, maybe earnings every half year. I mean, what some people are saying is, well, companies should just release it whenever they want to.
Yeah.
Right. There's no no obligation at all.
There should be absolutely no federage. I mean, the boards of these places have been a total joke for 20 years. Why not just say it?
Well, yeah. By the way, and no matter how many laws they break, like, for example, in the healthcare system, nobody ever gets indicted or goes to jail. And, however, if you happen to be very wealthy and powerful, you'll get $25 million when you get blackballed and censored illegally, okay, by illegal collusion between the government and private parties, which, private parties can make whatever decisions they want. That's why they're called private parties. But when the government puts their thumb on the scale, that is a crime. That is against the law. So...
What are you talking about? Okay. We have no laws.
Well, exactly. Except if, in the event that you're very wealthy and powerful and you get thrown off of a platform because the government said you can't say that, not some private entity, but the government said it, you get $25 million.
Well, we have an amoralist in chief, which is making it worse. Not that we weren't going that way anyway. We were.
No, I think the idea that this is a this is a Trumpist thing. This is
I said we've been going this way, and now we have somebody who doesn't even recognize what's right and wrong. So
I don't think any of the people. Listen, I don't think any of the presidents that we've had, at least from after Carter, okay, who had a little comity, even though I think in many ways he was, he just didn't have the nuts to do what needed to be done in some cases.
Nobody does.
But he owned it, whether he had the nuts to do what. Should be done or not.
He put Volcker in there, which was a massive show of stones.
Well, yes, and oh, by the way, he also, although he tried to evade the responsibility for it, he also destroyed the nuclear reprocessing industry in the United States, which, as far as I'm concerned, was the largest single act of effect.
By the way, you've said that on 100 occasions, and I've agreed with you on 100 occasions. But, and I think a lot of listeners probably understand what we're talking about. And
no, I think most people don't have any clue what I'm talking about.
Okay, well, Cliff Notes' version is, back when I was in high school, they said when we were putting these nuclear plants together or thinking about it, the idea of having a breeder feeder, whatever you want to call them, to kind of clean up the waste product was on the board, and it was right front and center. And somewhere along the line, Carter said, we don't want to do that. Now, my question to you is, well, it's a very brief. Okay, but question to you is, what if he wouldn't have done that? Would it have proceeded far along? Who would have built them? Who would own them? I mean, it seems like it would be too big for one. It would have been too big for Commonwealth Edison to build something big enough to clean up everybody else's stuff. I mean, how would you have foreseen it going forward if he didn't do that?
Well, that's not... Well, it wasn't that Commonwealth Edison would build something and everybody else would clean it up. It's that...
No, I mean, that they would build something. In other words, who would have been the builders? Who would have been the owners? How would they have made money?
At the time...
I'm not arguing with you. I'm asking who. I'm saying, how would it have proceeded? I mean, would everybody with taking them over the rails there? I mean, what would it look like? I guess is my question.
We would have had a closed fuel cycle. Okay. Now, part of Carter's disruption also was seeding all of the lawsuits that essentially made getting a plant online a impossibly expensive and slow process, which destroyed the economics, okay, on top of everything else. So, I mean, it wasn't just that he shut down reprocessing. It was also that his executive order also fed all the crazies who, you know, of course, their position is, you can't possibly safely run this thing. We're all going to glow in the dark. Now, that was the bottom line on why he claimed he did it, okay? That's what he believed. All right, rightly or wrongly, that's what he thought the outcome was going to be, was that civilians... All right,
while we're on this subject, I think we owe the listeners, and maybe you owe me, when this all started, who put the first ones, I mean, who put the Dresden facility here in? I mean, when did that all start? When did those permits get issued? How long did it take? They're supposed to have a 40-year life and are still putting along just fine. Right. I mean, who did all that? And were any of the first ones, you know, a total bust, or did they all work? Or, I mean, I don't really know any of that history.
So
I would love to know it, actually.
Right. So where this all started from, of course, was the Manhattan Project. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And,
okay.
I mean, that was the genesis of all of it.
Well, was this before or after Enterprise, the nuclear ship?
Well, that was all part of it.
Okay.
Okay. I mean, what drove this originally was primarily Rickover and his belief that the future of naval propulsion, particularly for submarines, which by the way turned out to be correct for submarines, was nuclear power. Okay. Now, as it turned out, Rickover also shaved a bunch of corners that maybe shouldn't have been, but he got away with it. Okay. During some of the testing. And some of the people that were working on the plant that ultimately went into the Nautilus were rather alarmed at some of the corners that were being shaved, because during some of the tests there were
Or after they put that place out in Idaho that were Hal trained in? This must have been before that.
Well, this was in the general. This was in the same sort of timeline. Okay. But the thing is that so there were during the development process of civilian nuclear power and military nuclear power in the United States, we didn't have any really nasty bad things happen in the U.S. that were visible. Now, there were things that did happen that we're still paying for, because...
Well, they killed the whole movie set of the John Wayne movie out in Nevada.
Well, I mean, there was that. There was also Hanover, and there was a lot of material that was clandestinely released into the environment. I'm not saying that we were all good guys when it came to that, because we weren't. Okay.
Did you?
There was a reactor that blew up in Chalk River in Canada. So I mean, there've been a few of these things that happened that were really bad.
By the way, sorry to interrupt. I don't read it all that much anymore, but I still get the Notre Dame magazine. They ship it to everybody, right? Carl, I got to say, boy, 30, 35 years ago, it was a long, long time, because I've tried to find it online and I can't. Well, maybe I'm not good at it, but there was a guy that wrote I think it was a guy, he had to write like a 30-page article in Notre Dame magazine about the cost of nuclear development, and he went through every sort of accident, including the John Wayne, you know, where they blew it up when the people were filming a movie out there.
Oh, yeah.
And all the professors that died because they went in the wrong room. It was a huge list of crap of people that got essentially messed up by the program. It's not very public.
Yeah. No, it was there were a number of incidents during that period of time that were all bad. I mean, I'm not saying that none of that didn't happen or, you know, it wasn't real. It was real.
But now we think there was, like, no cost. We just kind of blew right through it without any problem. That's not true.
Well, it's absolutely not true. But the thing is this, is that what we, you know, what we are dealing with now, right, is we have the Greta Thunbergs of the world. You know, we're all going to die because of, you know, climate change. You guys got to stop driving your cars and stuff like this. And I'm like, you know, when I lived in Chicago, there was a period of time that I was off Wolf Road, right near Palwaukee Airport. Okay. You know, it's the executive airport there that's north of O'Hare.
The 1% of airport.
It's the airport for the rich SOBs that have Learjets.
Yeah.
Basically. All right. I mean, now they have regular.
Now, a Learjet, wouldn't be caught dead flying any Learjet now, a guy like you. You'd have to have a Gulfstream.
Yeah, it'd have to be a Citation or something like that, right? But you know, I mean, also regular general aviation, you know, piston. You know, you got
some Cessna. Some schmuck in a Cessna.
Some schmuck in a Cessna, exactly. All right. So if you've ever lived near one of those, and by the way, you don't have a garage because it's an apartment, right? So, you know, so you park your car in the parking lot outside. The amount of crap that ends up on your vehicle, which, by the way, is all burnt kerosene.
it's called an economic externality. You know that.
Yes, I do. But the amount of that ends up all over your car, compared with, you know, not living near there. I mean, you know, my daughter right now and her boyfriend live fairly close to TYX, which is Tyson. That's the regional airport here. And, you know, she brings her car over here, and it looks like, you know, somebody took a soot crap on top of it all over. And the thing is this, is that, you know, me living over here, a fairly decent distance away, you know, zero of that. All right. So here's the thing. People say, well, you know, don't drive, you know, no more cars, no more of this, you know, California, no more gasoline powered vehicles, da 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 da. Okay, fine, except for one problem. You'd still like lubricating oil for machinery. You'd still like vinyl tubing for the IV that goes in your arm if you go in the hospital. You'd still like syringes. Okay, you'd still like all.
Hey,
sorts
syringes
of,
used to be reusable.
Well, they used to be glass and reusable. Yeah, they were made
out of
glass.
They were metal. They were like harpoons.
Metal and glass.
Yeah.
Okay. They put them in the autoclave and reused them. Okay, because they were metal and glass. You could autoclave them. You can't autoclave plastic. But you know, so I mean, there's a bunch of stuff that you want. Now, if you are going to stop burning gasoline, when you refine a barrel of oil, and not one person in 100 knows this, when you refine a barrel of oil, you get quite a lot of gasoline.
About 2/3.
Yeah, and by the way, you can't avoid getting the gasoline. All right? Now, the only way you can avoid getting the gasoline is don't refine the oil. What do you intend to do with the gasoline?
I think you probably put it in my truck, but that would just be me.
Well, no. Well, you'd put it in your truck. I'd put it in my car or truck. But by the way, Greta wants nobody to be able to legally put it in their truck.
Oh, I know, but there's people on. I think there's a middle ground sort of on this. I mean, I think when we built the Alaskan pipeline, I thought it was a terrific idea. Okay, but I also know, I think I know, that when the oil companies decided to build, whoever was going to build the pipeline, I don't think it was the oil companies, but it was some sort of consortium, they didn't give a rat's ass about any animal, about anything. And
right.
And the environmentalists bitched and moaned for a couple of years, and the pipeline was built very successfully, but it looked nothing like the original drawing.
Well, yeah.
So, I mean, the idea that people on both sides of different points
Chief,
of view can
look. Would I prefer to live in the world that I grew up in, where you got choked by the chemical plant down the street, which I did, by the way? You could not. You really didn't want to swim or eat the fish out of the water, right? Which was true.
Oh God, yeah. You actually had a swim in Chicago River last week. It wouldn't have been me, but the fact is, nobody died, which I never dreamed 20 years ago somebody would ever put their ass in there.
Which you didn't used to be able to do without dying, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you could dump a body in there. There was an
emergency rule in Chicago for 40 years that if somebody entered the river, he was immediately to go to the emergency room.
Yeah, well, duh.
Yeah.
And you know, and the thing is, though, the same thing was true, you know, pretty much everywhere else, right? I mean, I am...
Hey, do you think... This is really being conspiratorial. I mean, Do you think they cheated to get the river that clean for the swim?
No, actually, I don't. There are other rivers and, you know, tributaries to them that I'm well aware of because they were, you know, areas that I hung around in when I was younger, right? That were absolutely unsafe at that time, and now they're not.
But you're supposed to say define cheating.
Well, okay. All I'm saying is I believe that the testing that they did, in fact, showed that, you know, the levels of contaminants were.
Well, they needed about 10 or 15 days without a storm.
Right.
But
right.
Also,
well, yeah, because otherwise they wash off the streets.
No, not to wash off the street. The overflow from the toilets.
Oh well, okay. So they've still got problems with not being able to actually treat everything.
But here's where, if you wanted to clean the river out quickly. All you would do is open the locks a little bit.
No, I understand.
Yeah, but I mean, not many people do. If you open the locks a little bit and let lake water in, which would be illegal,
right?
You could flush the thing out pretty quick.
Yeah, right.
I don't think they did that, but that would have been the sneaky way to do it in the middle of the night. What do you say we open these up a little bit and nobody will notice?
Yeah, crack them on both ends and just kind of like, you know, flush the toilet, so to speak.
Yeah. Did you see that video I sent you about that massive ship that came down the river where it couldn't fit in the lock, so they opened the one end and shoved it in and then pulled it out by some tug and then closed the other end or something?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's...
People are pretty clever.
If you got to do something, you got to do something, right?
Yeah.
But you
think that this somehow would have been smooth? That somebody... Who have you thought would have been... How many of them would there have been or should there be now... And who would be running them? And would it be public company? Would it be? I mean, how many breeder reactors do you think we need? Like four, three, two?
Well, we had one at Faramy in Monroe in Michigan. Okay, we had one there. That one had an incident, which was due to stupidity during construction that wasn't on the plans, and. I knew when I was growing up, my next door neighbor's father. Of course, you know, I wasn't really a friend of his because he was an old man, right? You know, I mean, but I was a friend of his kid.
You could be friends with old people.
Well, he was one of the physicists at the plant.
Ah,
all right. So I mean, we're not talking about somebody that was, you know, a guard at the guard shack.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah.
It was actually one of the guys, right, that ran the thing, and. There was a change made, an engineering change made when the plant was built that wasn't correctly covered, and as a result, they had an overheating problem because of a piece of metal that broke loose inside the unit. There was fairly close to there being an uncontrollable situation occurring there. But that, you know, I mean, human beings screw up, okay? I mean, that's and that is exactly what Carter's point was that humans make errors.
And usually you have somebody in the room, as the Yiddish people call them, a mensch, either male or female, that sees it coming and solves it before it blows, usually.
Well, and that's what happened in this case, okay, is that it was detected. He wasn't on duty at the time it happened, but one of the other physicists was, saw it, recognized what was going on, scrammed it, and as a result, there was a lot of damage. There was a lot of physical damage, but there was no, you know, there was no disaster, no release to the environment.
Was it able to be fixed?
Well, it was, but then economically, with all of the BS that was going on, they ultimately, you know, it did run after that, but then they shut it back down and decommissioned it.
What was the fiasco, and if you know the answer to this one, you could be the only guy I know. What was and is the fiasco with Zion?
Well, Zion...
That's the newest one, and it's been closed for 50 years.
I don't know specifically what Zion's issue is, but it may be similar to Diablo's. Okay, so there's two basic designs for civilian nuclear power in today's world, because we shelved the one that we should have gone after because you can't use it for dual use and make weapons with the material it makes. And that's the liquid fluoride one that they ran down at RNL. And now, by the way, the Chinese and the Indians are both exploiting this. And that's going to be very bad for us, because that is both a means of energy production, electricity. It also is a means, if they wise up and use it correctly, of converting coal into syn fuel, which is something that completely takes the Middle East's oil supply off the table. And
that's all right. We'll export the coal to them. We'll do that stuff.
Well, I've written at some length about this. It was an entire chapter in my book. The fact that this is trivially exploitable to make that an economic process. The problem is not that we can't do it. We can do it. Hitler did it in World War II. The problem is that the economics don't work without the drive energy coming from somewhere, and that's because, you know, like all chemical reactions, you have to have energy to make them go. But that's one of the answers to that problem. But the pressurized water reactor, the issue that comes up is that the steam generator that goes between the primary loop and the loop that drives the turbine, if that thing develops any kind of a fault and you get cross-contamination between the two sides, you have to shut it down, because the steam turbine side of it is not designed to be safe to operate in that set of circumstances. Now, the boiling water reactor it is, but with a PWR it's not. And so...
Right, since who knows what we're talking about on Friday, can we table this to Friday? I want to talk a little bit about few minutes on the shutdown. Here's my view on these sort of shutdowns. on one sort, and this happens with both sides, who's ever in power, whatever, we do this. But I think there is somewhat of a, I'll say, a sense to it, Carl. Maybe not the specific issues, but because you and I have talked, and Kevin and the rest of us, kind of ad nauseum about these bills don't ever crack up to total up to where they were tracked up to be. That
right.
One person might say, "Hey, look, you idiots voted for these bills. This is what's happening. Why we come to a shutdown? Why do you want another slice of the apple?" And I think the answer to that might be, if we don't say either side's, you know, losers, is that you're not supposed to be at this sort of a deficit at this point if you just totaled up what people told you the bills were going to cost. And then people look at it and go, "Wait a minute, we're way the bleep over. What are we doing here?" I think if there's any kind of common sense to it, I think that's sort of it is. That, wait a minute, the infrastructure program didn't return what we thought it was going to return. Oh, by the way, this tax cut bill, you said it was going to cost X. It seems to be costing one hell of a lot more.
But here's the other thing too. Okay, so when Biden was in office and they put this subsidy change in on Obamacare, okay, which is the thing that the Democrats are screaming about, that's the one that's being publicly screamed about. The other one is that Medicaid has illegally in several states been being used to provide health care to illegal immigrants, which is not federally permitted. The program doesn't allow that to be done.
That's a pimple on the ass of an elephant to the whole
money. Now, it's not, Chief. We're talking about CMS is where the entire deficit problem is, okay? And Medicaid is a huge part of that. It's not the whole story by any stretch of the imagination, but it's not a pimple on an elephant's ass. And so the problem here is that when this subsidy thing was put in, and that's a fairly substantial amount of money too, all right? It's not the whole problem, but it certainly is a real number. When that was put in, in order to avoid it being scored, and this is what both sides of the aisle do, and this is how we get in this box, all right? So you're right about this being, you know, this is how the box gets entered, right? What they did was they passed this as so it would expire. So it was good for 4 years or 5 years or whatever it is, and then it expires at the end of this year. The reason they did that is that the CBO, by law, is required to consider an expiring law as one that will when they do their budget.
But they never do.
Well, but they're...
Yeah, and I get it.
All right, so the way you avoid getting scored for putting $10 trillion on the national debt is by saying the law's only there for 3 years or whatever it is, instead of on an indefinite forward basis, which is, of course, what everybody expects is going to ultimately end up happening, right? And so it was the Congress of the time during the COVID stuff, when they put this change in, that deliberately rigged the numbers on purpose for the precise reason of not making people go, hey, wait a minute, this is going to blow up the deal, right? And now all of a sudden they're whining. The very same people that did this are whining and crying that, hey, wait a minute, what do you mean this thing is, you know, we really wanted to blow another $4 trillion hole in the national debt. But both sides of the aisle do this.
All right, we're going to have Joel here for a second, but we'll talk about this some more on Friday, because the amount of care, the amount of money people are charging for the care, the amount of people that have just opted out of the system and are getting no care. If you look around in a city like Chicago, there's people here that have no chance of ever going to a doctor.
You know what? And you know what? If we do not stop the scam from top to bottom in this, it is going to destroy the country.
But the idea, I watched the
Chief, you got to stop the but we have to take care of people, because you know what, the way you solve the problem
the solution is just don't take care of people. I get it. That's what we're doing.
No, that's not the solution. The solution is you start throwing people in prison and the price goes down.
Okay, but that's not going to happen.
Okay, well, guess what? Then stop complaining about the fact that we can't pay for what it is that you're demanding.
I'm trying to be with you on this. If you don't get the cost down, it's impossible to take care of even the rich people, let alone the poor people.
That's right.
And right now, it appears to be we're not going down that road. We're going to sue YouTube, so they paid a guy $24.5 million as a bribe to keep YouTube going. That's the stuff we're doing now. We haven't attacked.
By the way, when do I get my check? And when does anybody else who got thrown out?
You don't, because you're not a president. It can intimidate the hell out of people.
Well, and I also, you know, I don't happen to have an extra couple million laying around to sue him with.
Right. Well, but it wouldn't be yours anyway. but what I'm saying is the amount of, I mean, we talk at some level of conversation, we can say we're extending medical care to illegals, okay? I drove by a whole bunch of the last illegal group, I guess they weren't illegal because they were here. They couldn't have been citizens yet. I don't know if any of them had cards or whatever, but it was right by my house.
Yeah,
I don't think any of those people, unless somebody had a baby and I didn't see anybody pregnant, ever entered a hospital, ever. But the care does not go down that far. It just doesn't.
Well, the thing is that it all depends. So the answer is it depends, right? You know, Reagan started this with EMTALA, all right? And ever since then, rather than deal with the fact that there is not another country on the planet that allows this crap to go on, we found ways to hide sausage.
Well, we have to get to Joel here, but...
Well, he's not up.
Okay, well, all right, I am not a proponent of socialized medicine. You know that. I'd like to see it competitive, but it's not. So here we are in this no man's land of God knows what. But what I've seen in the last 10 or 15 years, and we can have anybody who's a guest can argue to live and bleep out of themselves, but I see this every day. I see people that are retired on Medicare that won't go to a doctor. They can't afford the pills. I mean, I have people in my family that are veterans that are cutting pills in half. People are opting out. They're just not getting the care. That's the truth. Now, I don't think socialized medicine is the solution. It isn't, especially if you charge the same thing you charge now. It makes it worse. But, right. I mean, wherever we're going here now is there's people that just don't even have a level of care. And it sort of started with COVID. I mean, Matt started, but it accelerated. We had, what's her name, Carol, what was her name? Karen Reese. She came in here, she talked about her mother-in-law. Couldn't get into the hospital, couldn't get in to see anybody during COVID. Turns out when she finally got in, she had stage 4 breast cancer, was dead in 3 months.
Well, Chief, I fought this war with people that were employees of mine in the 1990s with the insurance companies. I mean this goes back a long effing way. And absolutely nobody, I mean, for all the screaming that was done, you know, and I was involved in the political side of it on the technology side, but also because, you know, hey, by the way, Clinton was in office and, you know, tried to ram through, you know, Hillary's thing, which, you know, was essentially, you know, what everyone is.
But when you say ram through, nobody wants to cooperate. And either say nobody wants to actually tell the industry you can't do that anymore. So when you say
yeah, exactly. And the problem is that so what ends up happening is what happened with Obamacare, which is that the industry wrote the effing bill, okay, to protect the monopolies, and continue the scam. And then everybody's like, oh, but this is going to help all these people. No, it's not. It's going to screw everybody.
Hopefully not all I know, but like I said, I have a friend who's, I think I have 3 or 4 friends that are on this Eliquis. That's the one I keep.
Yeah.
The thing is that the difference kind of in your and my approach to this is I always go for the minimalist and say, wait a minute, if we can't pay for this guy, we surely can't pay for everybody. Where everybody else looks at the top and says, oh man, we're playing. Biden, I think in his second year, put out a list of drugs that says we're going to drop the prices on these 10 drugs. Okay, that was, Eliquis was on that list.
Only for Medicare.
Yeah, he did, actually he did, didn't he? It was only, okay, but I'm
only
not even sure.
Only for Medicare, which, by the way, screws everybody
by the way,
on it.
Okay, the people that I'm talking about are on Medicare.
Well, guess what? Not everybody is.
Okay, what I'm saying
is, so you shove it up my butt so he gets helped?
Let me finish. The cost for the Medicare people is not down.
I understand.
So now, the new guy, Mr. Trump, is in there doing God knows what, making the Oval Office look like something out of a, I don't know what the thing is, but his mind is on all kinds of different stuff. Now, now here it is, 3.5, 4 years later, and guess what? People are still paying on Medicare $7,500 a year for privileges.
I know. By the way, Joel's up, so I'll get out of his way because I know he's.
What is with your team? Are you guys going to come back here to Tennessee or what? Or no?
Oh, you know, hey, listen, we, you didn't get to see a grown man cry at the bar last Saturday because we won.
You guys won?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't. You know, this whole adulation for these teams, I'm kind of losing it. But
I am too. But now they went from 15th to 8th in standing.
The Irish went from 22nd to 21st.
I'm just saying it was good for a bump.
There you go. Which means they're close. What do you got? Is there 12 teams now, right? Or is there 8 that are in the?
I don't know. But we're 8th. Well, it was 15th, and now we're 8th.
No, I'm saying how many get in the playoffs? Is it 12 or 8?
Oh, I don't know. I can't even.
Anyways, let's get to Joel. S&P futures down 10, NASDAQ futures down 28. A little bit of a pause here. But before we don't know about the shutdown. Joel, how are you, bud?
Good morning, Chief. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Your guys are still in the hunt. Beat Nebraska, although it was a tough game.
Yeah, that wasn't bad. I mean, we had a week off. So went into Nebraska. It was a good win. I mean, could have won by more. Schedule sets up. Nice. I mean, we're double-digit favorite against Wisconsin, which...
What happened to Wisconsin? Wisconsin seems to have really fallen out the last couple of years. What's going on there?
What's going on is they brought in Luke Fickell, the former Ohio State and Cincinnati, Ohio State assistant, and went to Cincinnati, had a pretty good record there. There's an interesting thing going on. He still has a couple years left in his contract. And he has, get this, Chief, I'm not sure what your buyout is at Stocks and Jocks, but he has a $25 million.
My buyout is a door hit in the ass.
He has a $25 million buyout. And from what, you know, with the team not doing as well, they don't have the cash.
Now, when you say buyout, it's $6 million a year for 6 years, and he's done two, so you owe him 4 years left at six a year. That's 25.
Yep.
Okay, but they'd have to fulfill the contract, which is what the buyouts are, correct?
Yeah. I don't know if it's a lump sum, but it's still, I mean, whatever, 25 mil is 25 mil. And for a program like Wisconsin right now, you don't have donors lining up for a team. I don't even know. When's the last time they were in a bowl game? I mean, wow, there's so many bowl games.
Well, a couple years ago, they were pretty good, not that long ago.
Yeah, but they definitely have fallen from grace.
Well, what makes you think they've piled in hand over fist into this new world? Maybe they haven't. I don't think Purdue has. I don't think Northwestern has.
Who wants to go to Wisconsin? I mean, I just don't think...
Wisconsin?
You know,
it's a spectacular school.
I mean, unless you want a big offensive lineman, no. I mean, I can't name one player in the team. I can't name one player.
Well, they used to get serious offensive linemen out of Wisconsin.
Yep.
And they had some, but you know, who wants to go to Nebraska? I mean, it's all the, but right now I don't know how much of it's all the cash. I don't know how much of it's all the deal. I don't know if any of these kids even go to school. I'm saying I think there's some schools where their heart is not into this new thing, and they'll see how it play out. I don't see Purdue as being a
no.
Nope. Actually, I thought Indiana wasn't, but I was wrong there. I mean, they're clearly
that
coach,
in. Is bringing them in. Did I ever told my? I've been to Wisconsin twice. In fact, for games. In fact, I'm 0-2. And if you look at Michigan's record in Wisconsin over like the last, let's say, 90 years, they're like 85-13-2. But I went to the game in 1993. I was actually back living here in the Detroit area. We flew into Chicago. We drove up to Madison. It was also Halloween, okay? You imagine, like, things are up there at Halloween.
Yeah, yeah.
And Wisconsin pulled the upset against us. And we were with some friends, and we had, you know, we had four seats, but they weren't together, two and two. So me and my buddy Mark were sitting together, and Lisa and her friend Margie were sitting together. And the Wisconsin, I doubt if you remember this, the Wisconsin students decided to rush the field. Okay?
Yeah, there's a gazillion of them.
Yep, and they were all in the end zone, and as they were rushing the field from the stands, the front barrier gave way.
Whoa.
And so there was like a major pile up. And I don't know, if I had a cell phone back then, I definitely didn't have it on me. And we knew where the girls' seats were, and we knew they weren't rushing the field and everything. But fortunately, I think it just a couple broken legs and broken arms and stuff. No one died.
Well, they had a good run. Who was the guy from Notre Dame? Was there Coach Barry something or something? The ball hit a guy.
Barry Alvarez.
Yeah, they had a good run when he was there.
Yeah, they did. They did. And they also weren't too bad. They had Belima. I believe it's, what is it? Bert Belima, who's now at Illinois. Yeah, he was at Wisconsin before he thought he'd be able to put his big boy pants on and go to the SEC, and he went over to Arkansas and got spanked. But yeah, they've had their runs. They've had their upsets over the years.
Well, what do you make of... talk about the shutdown in a second, but what do you make of what's the infrastructure? Let's say pull Purdue up, since you know I think their budget's probably a tenth of Notre Dame's, but so it's not really a fair game, which wonders why they're playing each other, but that's another story. But what do you think, if you and I went into Wisconsin and say, okay, we want to play in this new world, what is the infrastructure for, you know, 1,000 people in the portal that you don't have any films on, you don't have any idea. Maybe you recruit a few of them so you have some idea, or at least know their high school coach or something. Half of them have never been in a game. You're not going to get practice film. How the hell do you work through that and give all these guys a bid for cash when we don't even know if they're any good or not? I mean, plus, not to mention your admissions department. If you're any kind of a school, Big Ten schools are actually all pretty damn good. They're going, who is this guy? He's never been to class yet. I mean, what are you trying to do? I mean, this whole thing seems like just a big circle bleep to me. What am I missing?
I think it's the schools that have the resources, and you know that could. I mean, Michigan, I think, has a general manager of football now.
But you can't care.
General manager of basketball. So they're pro. They act like the pros. They
but you can't
scouting.
Care about the academics at all. If somebody's been three schools in 3 years, how do you think they've even been to a class? Or how would you even know?
Oh, they probably have gone to a class, but I think that they probably have. The way it goes is they probably have. You know, a lot of notes on kids from, you know, the recruiting early on, right? And then they see what is going on. And I think also what probably happens and probably in wouldn't be a surprise is, you know, coaches talk to other coaches about, you know, what's going on and players transferring and everything. And I mean, look what happened with Michigan, and I don't know if the coaches talked on this, but look what happened with Michigan and Indiana. Indiana's top receiver, Donovan McCauley, transferred to Michigan, and Michigan's top receiver, Tyler Morris, transferred to Indiana. So I think they do their homework. They know the teams. They know the needs that they have.
That's easy. The kid that, you know, the guard that you and I were trying to get to Michigan, all of a sudden he went to somewhere else. He went to Tennessee.
Yep.
Now after a year, he's in the portal, and you go, gee, Joe hasn't played yet. how do I know if he's gotten any better, or he's gained 50 pounds, or he's a slug, or even shows up for prep? How do you evaluate somebody how do you even?
Tough.
I mean, you're not going to get practice film. I mean, the kid says,
But Chief, I think what you're seeing here more for these transfers, it's like the guys that have been there like 3 or 4 years, and like they want to go one more year. Yeah, as opposed, you know, if you transfer out right away as a freshman, maybe you just weren't fitting into the program. But I think what you're seeing is you're fourth, you're fifth, you're sixth, you're seventh year players.
You're seventh. So what do you think of this? Somebody's shutdowns potential have been nothing. There was a couple articles this morning on CNBC. This one might actually be real or something like that. What do you make of this?
Right, has the market a little bit under pressure, for sure. We do know that we won't get jobs data on Friday if it's released. I wish they'd shut the whole thing down and kick everyone out of there and get some people that are not so nonpartisan in there. Right now, it's having a negative effect on the market, slightly negative effect. I think there's other factors, sell Rosh Hashanah, buy Yom Kippur. We've had a great quarter. We're coming into, I think more importantly, you've come to end of a quarter, two great quarters in a row. Other factors, interest rates, coming down. Hey, we thought we were going to get 3 cuts. Now maybe it's 2. We don't know what's going to happen in 26. I think it's a short-term negative catalyst for market. But then when the government, woohoo, well, they settle it and they rally it back as they always do. So that's why I'm looking at the government shutdown, Chief. So that's it. Go Blue, beat the Badgers, and I'll be back with you next week.
All right, bud. How's your show going?
Good. For you more active traders, investors in there, Stock Trader Network, we do a lot of extra content from 9 to 10:30. And if you want some action on the close, sign up for a free trial, Stock Trader Network. We cover 3:30 to 5, cover all the action in the last half hour, the closing imbalances, and then the 4 o'clock, 4:15, 4:30 news drops. We're all over it, setting you up for your next trading day. So you can email joel@premarketprep.com. I can set you up with a special.
It's good stuff. And they have great guests. I know I have been one.
They have great guests. I got to get the Chief on here again, Chief. I know, but you've been requested. So
all right, bud.
Back on. Okay?
All right, take care of yourself, buddy. Do we have Mr. Kenny?
Yes, we do.
Yeah, we do.
Hey, what's up, buddy? How are you? You sound great.
I'm good. How are you? Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing all right. You know, it's Cubby's in the playoff today, but 2 o'clock, so this will be a little weird.
Oh yeah, go Tigers too! I forgot.
Well, the Tigers are they're what? They're 11 o'clock.
Yeah, Scooble on the mound. You got to respect that. About the rest of the season. All right, go Blue.
And my secret team here is I get a feeling, Kenny, this is when you just watch one team. Well, the Cubs put the Reds in the playoffs by losing 4 games in a row in Cincinnati. But having said that, this Reds team, they're young, they're fast, they're very athletic. They had a couple of good pitchers. I think they're going to give the Dodgers all they can handle.
I think so, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, what's up, Joe? Can you hear us?
Yeah, just okay. Chief kept on asking me questions.
You're still coming. You're still coming in.
Yeah, you're good. We just were talking about the government shutdown, Joel.
All right.
I got it.
All right, you got him? We snipped him.
Yeah, he's gone.
He's out. Kenny's in. There you go. See how quick that heck can happen, Kenny?
I'm here.
Yes. Joel didn't turn off his. He must be coming through his studio mic. So it's cool. So what do you make all this? Are you in New York with your finger on the pulse of the world here, or are you back home?
No. I was in New York last week. I'm back in Florida today. So, you know, listen, like everybody else, I'm frustrated to think that, you know, it's the same exact CR that they voted on in December, and now suddenly the Democrats are saying, no, we need $1 trillion more worth of spending. I think here's the problem. The problem is when the government shuts down, there are legitimate people in this country that lose their paycheck until they decide to come back to work. I think the ones that should lose the paycheck are the elected officials, should not get paid until they come back to the table and make a deal. There's no reason that other people, parks people should close, and parks people shouldn't get paid, and veterans and the military shouldn't get paid. That's baloney. They should all get paid. The Congress is the one who shouldn't get paid until they come back to the table. See how quick that would change.
Well, I don't disagree. I mentioned you probably weren't listening where I was, you know, mentioning to Carl. I think the reason, well, if there is a reason for this other than politics, is that both sides pass these bills with this ridiculous promise in the bills, right?
Yeah.
And then when you actually get to the time when your deficit should be X, it's X plus.
Yeah.
And so people look at it and go, wait a minute, something's not working. I mean, if there's any logic to it, that would be the logic. That's when you would realize that, oh, by the way, the great beautiful bill is costing us a boatload, more than you said it was.
Yeah.
I mean, the same thing happened in the Reagan administration, where they passed the big tax cut, which everybody loves Dutch for. Nobody remembers that a year and a half later they had to put a massive tax increase because it was burying the federal budget. You know, so I mean,
yeah,
and you know, the infrastructure bill probably didn't return what Biden said it was going to return, and all of a sudden it's 2 years later, and you go, wait a minute, you said this tax bill is going to cost us $1 trillion. Looks like it's $1.5 trillion, and our stuff is going up faster than it should be. It's a problem. Otherwise, why would it ever be a problem? If the debt was moving up at just the rate that people thought it was, why would it be a problem? But obviously, it's growing up faster than that, right?
Going up faster, right?
So it is. It appears like an awkward time to do something, but somewhere you got to look at it. I don't know. I'm not saying either side's position is correct, but there's no question, you and I have talked about, that the deficit is going up way faster than either one of the last five idiots have told us it would. Right?
Correct. Yep.
Now, as Carl says, a lot of that's in Medicare, or not in Medicare, but in those areas. And oh, by the way, no president seems to be able to touch those people. So until you do, you got a problem. Not to mention.
I hear you. So what do you do about it? So I think the fact that, you know, they're going to listen. Part of me says they're going to, at the 11th hour tonight, they'll come to an agreement. Although everything you hear on the television today says not happening, that they're too far apart. There's no way they can come together, that they're going to end up shutting down. They'll throw, you know, they'll throw mud at each other. Each other like they always do.
OK, well, define agreement. I'm going to define the agreement as they push it off for 60 days, not an agreement on the numbers at all.
No, agreed. But, well, the agreement means that, so then they would sign the CR, which just pushes it off till November.
Yeah.
Correct. That's, I think, what they're going to do.
But that's not what you and I would call an agreement.
No, agreed. That's not what you and I would call an agreement, but that's the way, you know, that's the way it works. They've done it for 13 times in a row, as they both made us aware that they've done this 13 times in a row, and this is the way it works, and then they come back to the table and they negotiate. I think the whole thing is flawed, but that's the way it works at the moment, so then that's the way it works.
Or
right?
Or that's the way it doesn't work.
Right. Yeah, right.
kind of the same sort of deal. What you get more and more people, even your buddy Kramer, he's talking about AI boom is different than the dot-com bubble, but then all of a sudden he says his stocks are getting too high. He's talking out of both sides of his mouth too. Everybody is. I mean,
I agree. They're all talking out of both sides of their mouth, right? Which is always a problem. And so you know, you don't. I don't pay a whole lot of attention to what Jim Cramer says, But I do think that while I think the AI trade is certainly crowded, I also think that it's different this time in the sense that this is, you know, this is the fourth industrial revolution, tech revolution. This is going to continue to change the world. So I don't think it's necessarily, it might be short-term overdone, but it's not going away. Do you know what I mean?
Well, but the trade, I think, for the long term is still...
Say it again?
But what, that's, you know, it's like the cloud. When it came to the end of the day, it's offloading your computer capacity to somebody else, and it's very, very competitive.
Correct.
So, but yeah. It never was the money. I mean, it was for a few people already in your door, people like Amazon and people like that we were already doing business with. They had a leg up on the competitiveness of it, but they never were able to gouge people, really. That's more of a Kevin question, but, I mean, you know, Kevin was doing that at Better World Books 10 years ago. I'm offloading...
Yeah, no, I hear you. They weren't able to gouge people. Were they? I don't know. Maybe they were.
I think the people who were in your door anyway, for smaller firms, I think they were able to charge a little more. But you know, Kevin used to say, I mean, he's probably listening, but that when he was for Better World Books, they were within 5 miles of the place. There were two or three places that would sell extra computer capacity. You didn't have to go to Microsoft. You didn't have to go to somebody else.
Correct.
But I'm saying, I'll be honest with you, Kenny. When I click up something on Google, if it's just a question, and then the AI pops up, if it's an answer I really care about, I mean, listening to you guys, I dig down lower. I don't just trust it. But if it's a simple question, I'm pretty happy not having to dig through, you know, something lower on the page. But I don't have to put a quarter in a slot every time I do that. I don't know how they're getting paid for it.
No, you're right. And so how do we, you're right. So then what's the answer? I don't know what the answer is at that point.
Well,
right?
It's just another advancement along a long line of advancements, and it makes things easier and quicker for people.
It will continue to make things easier and quicker for people. I think that's the point, which is why it's not going away, right? So I think the trade, again, while it might be crowded, it may feel like it's overdone. And I think it is overdone at the moment, short term. I think there's a lot of enthusiasm which may not be justified yet. And so I think it should pull back. But that doesn't mean the trade is over. That doesn't mean people should be getting out of that trade. Not at all, if you're a long-term investor.
Well, I mean, what does that mean? There's some Cisco's that say the same price it was 20 years ago. You know,
I'm not talking about Cisco. We're talking about the new names in the industry, right? The ones that are at the forefront. So names like Palantir, names like even these quantum names now are absolutely starting to explode.
You know what Palantir's? Sorry, but you know what Palantir's revenue per share is? Is the stock is trading 177?
Yeah.
You know what their revenue per share is? $1.50.
It's $1.50.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're saying Palantir's way, you're telling
I'm
me
I'm saying it, everything the good that's going to happen to them better happen, and it just might. But, I'm not going to tell you to sell it. It just might. My point is, it can't happen to all of them.
No, I agree. It can't happen to all of them, but that's true of everything, right?
Yeah.
Because good things happen to some of them and not all of them. So it's a matter of either being in the right names or being in a broad range of names, until you identify who the real winner is going to be. Right?
Well,
I mean, how are you going to listen? I'm not going to get rid of my Palantir. I'm not because I.
No, I'm not saying anybody should. I'm saying, but if you take the top 10 or 12 and expand them all out, and what they would have to do to essentially work their way into this price, we better colonize Mars pretty quick because there's not enough. But you know, the stuff that does kind of bug me a little, and not bug me, but makes it here because of my age, I guess, but the thing that NVIDIA did last week, why did that look to me like they invested in a place, and essentially the place can turn around and buy NVIDIA stuff.
They did. That's exactly what they did. It's circular.
What does that make
they
me
invested,
that make
they
me nervous?
They committed them to buy the NVIDIA chips, so it's just it goes in a circle. I agree with you. That's exactly what they did, though.
That's when you start propping up your own backlog. Boy, that's danger, Will Robinson.
Well, I mean, you could look at it that way, or could you say it was a brilliant deal that they locked in, they invested in, then they locked in a revenue stream, right? I mean, I don't know. You can look at it.
You become your own customer, which is kind of weird.
Correct. 100%.
I mean, I'm just saying, The reason why, I'll give you the very, very Cliff Notes version. When Pullman was taken over, right? Pullman Freight, this lady used to work, used to be on the show with us. She and I put together all the numbers. I was the analyst. She was the assistant treasurer. And her first comment was that with the freight industry, the freight cars, were going to be $1 billion the next year. Back when $1 billion was like a real lot of dough. Now it's like not much. Guys like you can write checks for that, right? And So she says, wait a minute, we don't have anywhere near the financing to go buy the stuff to make these many cars. we don't have the credit. Like, of course, nobody wanted to pay attention to her. And during the whole thing, I get a call from somebody, and I go, remember ITEL? Remember that name?
ITEL. I don't remember.
ITEL was, if you look around at railroad cars, okay, you look around and you say, well, you and I, could, if we're the chassis system, we could buy a railroad car and never see our car for 2 years. Once it goes to L.A., it could be on the Union Pacific. I mean, we know where they all are. Everybody pays per day. But ITEL said, look, why are we doing that? Why doesn't everybody form a pool? We'll buy all the cars and you just lease them from us, which actually made some sort of sense, right? But somehow or another, they got in trouble. They were like 90% of Pullman's backlog. And all of a sudden, one day, they went out of business while we were doing this thing for the Wall Street Journal. And I said to the boss, I go, hey, we don't have a customer anymore. I don't tell anybody that. Just keep going. Okay, then. They never even looked at that they were our only customer. And when I see something like this with NVIDIA doing this, I go, wait, what are you guys doing? I'm not saying they're going on the same road, but, that's a little weird. How about if I lend you a bunch of money to buy my stuff?
That's exactly what NVIDIA did, basically, right?
So
I don't know. Was it a brilliant deal, or is there something untoward about it?
I'm going to say to be determined.
Okay. The market obviously is voting that it's a great deal.
Oh, absolutely.
That guy
could be president. He could sell snow to the Eskimos. The head of NVIDIA.
Yeah, Jensen Huang.
Yeah, have you ever seen a guy better than him? Just whatever it is, that guy. One of my buddy's dad he used to sell cars, right? Used cars.
Yeah.
So he sells this guy a car, and he goes to turn it on, and it doesn't start. He goes, hey, the car you just sold me didn't start. The guy goes, you have no idea what good news that is. It gives us the opportunity to put a brand new battery in there for you tonight. The guy goes, okay. The guy could sell anything to anybody. And somebody CEO, that's the job now, right?
That's the job. And he does a very good job. To your point, he does an outstanding job at it.
So what do you think here? I mean, are the same 10 going to keep going? Are we going to broaden out? Or is somebody going to pull back?
So,
what do you think?
So, look, I think the same 10, or the same 7, 10, whatever you want to call them, I think they will keep going, but I do think that the market is broadening out. You can see that by the equal-weighted S&P. You can see how it reacts in terms of when you weight them all individually, where you're seeing other money being invested in. So, yes, I think it is broadening out. I think the economy is strong. I don't think we're anywhere near a recession. Do I think we're going to cut rates 3 more times this year? I don't. I think we're going to cut them 1 more time this year. Whether it's November or December doesn't make a difference. And then we'll see how it goes, and then we'll cut again in the new year. And I think the market has to start to understand that, because I think it's pricing in 2 more cuts this year, and I think it might be disappointed if it doesn't get it just a little bit, as long as the narrative continues to be we're going to continue lowering rates into the new year. Then I think the market will be okay. But look, you've already got a bunch of Fed heads that are coming out on the other side. You got Mussolini, you got Goolsbee, you got Beth Hammack, that are all coming out and saying, listen, while the path may be lower, we need to be very, very methodical and cautious and slow about how soon and how fast we cut rates. And so there's not a unanimity amongst the group. There are people that are concerned. On the other hand, you got Mirren, who's still screaming about, 50 basis point rate cut at the next meeting, because he's parroting what Trump wants him to say. But I think 50 basis points, if they were going to do it, they should have done it at the last meeting and left it alone. Now that they cut 25, I think they can only cut 25 more this year. Because, look, the economy is not going down the drain.
Why do you say that?
Because look at all the data. Look at personal income, personal spending. Okay. Look at retail sales. All these numbers are strong. Consumers continue to spend. Average hourly earnings are holding steady. the labor market may be softening a bit, but unemployment is still at 4.2%, which is at historically low levels.
We have, I would hope that, one thing, Kenny, if all the years we've been together, if you could give me one favor, think about forgetting about the unemployment number.
Okay.
Look at the number of people that aren't working total on the column. We're down to 58% people working. That is insanely low. Whether they're looking for a job or not, they're not working.
What are you saying? That's a bad number?
I think it's a useless number. Look at the 110 million people that aren't working. Out of that number, which is the highest it's ever been, we somehow are identifying 4.3% is actively looking for a job. I don't care if they're actively looking or not. They're not working.
Well, okay, that's right. But I will say that the numbers slide because once you fall off the rolls, you're no longer counted.
That's right.
Right? So I do agree with that number slot that way. But if you just look at it, if we're going to say, okay, this is the number that we've always looked at, and this is the number that's at historic lows at the moment, then if you're going to follow that same logic, then you have to follow the logic that, okay, we're at historic lows, right?
Well,
I agree with you, though, that maybe we should change the math. Maybe we should change the equation and say we're looking at it the wrong way.
I think
we need to look at it this way.
I think we need to look at the percentage of people that are able to work that are working, and we're down to 58.3%, which is not sustainable. The other thing is, I'll run this one by you. And again, this is just somebody you talk to. Just another thought for you. We are never going to be in a nominal recession because of the money they're pouring into the system, and we're not counting the price increases. We've been in a real recession for 25 years for most people. Right now, what you just said, people's hourly wages are not going down. What do you suppose the real inflation number is the last 6 months, especially since these tariffs kicked in? I see it every week. It's incredible what's going on here. And I'm going to say that these people are still going to tell us that inflation is 3%. I think it's 6. And they're going to keep putting money. The money supply, before this Trump guy got on there, And he wants to run the Fed like his boss owns a bunch of golf courses and wants to pay him off. Guess what? His boss owns a bunch of golf courses and wants to pay him off, right? So the idea of goosing the money supply growth from the 6 it is now to like 8 or 9, for God's sake, we're talking about the 70s again. How long can they keep lying to us on the prices?
I agree with you that while the inflation rate says that we're holding steady, there are certain things that are going up. But you and I know that, right? Because you and I live every day. The same way when we had 9% inflation, they kept telling us, don't worry. We were all choking to death. We saw it. They didn't want to admit it, but we all saw it.
When they said 9, it really was 12.
Well, probably correct. Probably right. At least it felt like 12, whether it was or not. It certainly felt worse than maybe they said it was. And that might be the case now. But what I see happening down, where what I'm experiencing, that prices for me, whether it's food, whether it's, utilities or anything, has been now relatively stable. They're higher. Because they were set higher. Once they never came down after the Biden inflation rate, right? Because we didn't go into a recession. In order for prices to really come down, you actually have to go into a recession. But we never did. So therefore, the prices that were elevated now stayed at that level. They haven't really gone up for me, nor have they gone down. So they're just staying at the same level.
I think that they've got people guided, I won't say brainwashed, guided into looking at certain things. All right, I mentioned this the other day that I have whenever I have nothing to do on a Saturday morning, I look around for the price of old trucks. And it's a habit I just can't break, right?
Yeah.
Well, I bought mine a year and a half ago. I'll tell everybody. I just drive through the snow and ice in the city, so I just don't want something that's new. So
yeah,
I get to say I paid $10.5 for it.
Yeah.
I'm going to say I wouldn't take less than $12.5 for it today.
Today.
Because that's what, and this is 18 months ago, and because I can't possibly replace it for less than that.
Right.
And yet, in the last week, I mean, we hear, the bozos from the administration and other people talking about inflation, and they get all over these numbers, and somehow it gets parroted out there. Yet, the other day, I was listening to somebody on News Radio 78, some auto analyst, and said The price of new cars is up 3.8% in the last, like, 90 days.
Yeah, well, I will say that, not that I was looking, right? Because I have a 2020 Infiniti that I brought in to be serviced. I don't know if I told you. I think I told you this. I brought in to be serviced. And while it was being serviced, the salesman came out to tell me, oh, Mr. Bulgari, you need to upgrade to a new car. We got 2025. Come in and look at it. So I went in to look at it just because I was wasting time and wait for the car. They wanted $1,200 a month for a new Infiniti, not even the QX60, which is like that SUV.
Yeah.
They wanted $1,200 a month for a lease that allowed me 10,000 miles a year. So basically less than 1,000 miles a month. I looked at the guy, I go, are you out of your mind?
Yeah.
I'm not spending that kind of money on a car that I can't even really drive at 800 miles a month. It's ridiculous to me.
I'll bet you the dealer also has a loan officer now for repairs and not just new cars.
That he does what?
He has a loan department for repairs and not just new cars.
Oh, I don't know. That's interesting. I don't know. That's interesting.
One of Audrey's friends who used to work for her cousin who passed said, yeah, we got a loan guy for repairs. People can't pay for the repairs, let alone the cars.
Yeah.
I mean, I think if somebody actually took a knife to the CPS... I mean, I think it would be, or CPI, people would be appalled. The medical part, God love, that would do it. Because I went through the owner's equivalent rent on the houses.
Yep.
There's a site I found, Kenny, that actually you can Google individual pieces of the CPI. Because, I mean, where I would ever get all that data, I have no idea. And it will take you back 25 years on the individual line. So if you put down owner's equivalent rent, you can just look at that line back for however many years, which is pretty cool. And they have in the last, since 2000, I think they have it up, 1.5 or 1.8, 180%. So it's up, whatever, it was 100. But if you look at the individual pieces of houses, of insurance and taxes, they're all up pushing 3%, 300%. So it's not even close. Yeah. Over like a long period of time. So if you look at the 2000 price, I mean, right now the median price is like 408. 2000, it was what, 135 or something? Something like that?
Well, yeah,
insurance has to be up 3.5 times since 2000, easy. I mean, what's the cost of a roof? Has to be up 5 times, for God's sake. And your taxes, I guarantee you there isn't a place in the country that isn't up 300% since 2000. I mean, sure isn't here in Illinois. I mean, So I mean, what do they keep? Are we that stupid that they just keep throwing stuff at us and we never dig into it at all? Evidently, we are. I mean, now granted, the price of your cell phones is down to nothing. You can buy a great TV for $300 if you want. I mean, some stuff has come down, but I buy a cell phone every 5 years. I buy a TV every decade. I mean, it's not the same thing.
Right. It's not the same thing.
So I mean, at some point we're going to get some kind of truth instead of people just fighting back and forth with people. And yet, the airwaves, I couldn't believe it. I was. When I was someplace, let's say where the person I was, all he'd want to do is listen to Fox and Newsmax because that's the only place they. The ranting and raving and sniping and willing to shoot people damn near over the escalator incident at the UN is something I never even dreamed. This has to be investigated. Whoever this person is, he tried to kill our president. And I'm like, it looked like somebody in the president's party hit the button at the bottom of the escalator.
Yeah,
and yet
no, I agree.
I mean, what are we doing with this?
Ridiculous.
And what are we doing with this? Yet this person, this has to be investigated. We need to shut down the UN. And if the person there tried to kill our president, we need to arrest them and high treason and shoot the guy damn near. I mean, what are we talking about? I mean, I didn't even know that stuff. I don't listen to any of that, and all of a sudden there I'm listening to it. It's no wonder people think like this. Maybe the left's the same way. I don't know. It could be.
Yeah.
I mean, I really feel sorry for anybody that's not been listening to that stuff all day. I mean, I'm lucky. I have to watch regular news for my clients. And you're the same way. We're kind of busy. We don't have time for that. It's like watching the soap operas, for God's sake.
No, we don't have time for it. But it is out there, and there are plenty of people that are listening to it and watching it, and screaming and yelling and jumping up and down. I'm not one of those people. That wasn't at the top of my agenda.
No, Kenny. You know how I knew this, Kenny? Were you ever a floor official on the floor at the New York Stock Exchange?
Yeah.
Well, my job, since I was right near the one escalator, if there was a fire or anything, I had to run over and hit the button, so I knew right where the button is.
Right.
And you could actually kick it if you didn't know it was there. It's right on the bottom of the thing. Because if somebody catches their sleeve in the, you know, in the thing, you want to stop it or something. You know, if it doesn't automatically stop, there's a lot of times you'd have to emergency stop the escalator. Every one of them has a button on both ends.
Yep, agreed. Agreed. And so somebody obviously pressed it. I don't know. I don't know if they have a kick. That seemed to die down. So I'm not really sure that there was that.
Oh, turn on Fox today. It's not died down.
Oh, is it still on?
Oh God, yeah.
I'll have to turn on.
You have no idea of the chicanery and how somebody tried to kill our guy.
Yeah, I thought that was a little bit ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, I'm not. I just kind of laughed that off. I was like, please.
You ever been on one that? You ever been on one that shut down suddenly?
You know, I have not been on one that shut down suddenly. No, I
because well, because if somebody like it used to happen on the trading floor every now and then with the trading jackets people wore.
Yeah.
You guys always kind of wore suits on New York Stock Exchange, right? So your sleeves were tighter.
Yeah.
The trading jackets, if you weren't careful, you could get caught in the banister.
Yeah.
And as soon as the banister got caught, the whole thing immediately shuts.
Yeah.
And if you got your hand on the banister, you're okay. If you don't, you're liable to go nose over. Because if the banister stops too, so it kind of helps you. But if not, the whole thing stops and you're just, you know, standing there scratching your head or something, if let's put it this way. If you're 25, you're probably not going over, but we might now. let's put it that way. But, it happens.
Yeah, no, definitely. It happens. That's why I thought the whole thing was a little bit overblown. I don't really think there was any malintent there. I don't really know what happened at this point. I didn't think it was such a big enough deal that I need to stop what I'm doing to figure out who hit the button.
All right, so on the stoppage here, so what is everybody ends up getting paid, right? They just don't work for a couple days.
They ultimately end up getting paid, but there are people like, I think in the military, the park services, there are some people that won't get a paycheck until they open up again, which I think is baloney. The ones that shouldn't get the paycheck are the elected officials. Well, why should the military not get a paycheck?
Have they ever not paid the military?
No, of course not. They pay, well, I don't know if they've never not paid them, but no, they pay them, but they hold them, you know, they dangle that in front of everyone and go, well, we can't pay the military because we shut down. That's bullshit. They should not pay the elected officials. Pay the military, of course you should, because they're still working. Pay the guys at the park services. Keep the parks open because that's America. You guys are the ones that screwed it up.
Well, you know, they actually had a guy from the parker services the other day say that if they shut it down, they need to shut the parks down. So because they tried to go with a skeleton crew or something like that, and all of a sudden, of course, it's not summer anymore, so I don't know how busy they all are. But actually, if you and I were traveling around the country, this would be the time we'd want to go, right, in September?
Yeah, now's the time to go.
What are those nasty kids around? Just be us walking up and down Yellowstone, messing with the bears? Oh, yeah, I hope these guys... But I don't really want to do it again in November, do you? I mean, come on, this is getting a little...
No, I don't want to do it again in November either. I don't want to do it again. I think the whole thing is baloney.
Well, 13 times, what's the difference? 14, I guess, huh?
Yeah, exactly, right? What's the difference? I hear you.
You sound fantastic. I hope you're feeling fantastic.
I do. Thank you very much. I'll keep you in the loop.
All right, S&P Futures down 13, NASDAQ Futures down 40. We want to go right to hell, and then we'll do our break at 7:30?
Yeah.
Is our professor with us? Yes, he is. I know his voice by now.
How you guys doing?
Doing all right. I'm just yesterday I did the foolish thing and I went through. Hey, you're a boy. I'm gonna sound like a total idiot here, but that's okay. I went through this math about 100 times here, Alan, but it doesn't sound right to me mathematically. That if I have the money supply growth from December 2000 to December 2008. And I got that at 8.3% a year. That's kind of a lot, right? And then I've got December 2008 to December 2020, which is when really all this inflation started. I mean, I'm not blaming it all on current people, although they don't seem to realize that they have it. I got that at 11% per year. That's kind of a lot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But how... But then if I do all 20 years, I come out with 14%. How could the 20 years be more than each one of the halves?
Well, I think what it is... Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So at 20 years, you have it... Well, maybe there just wasn't much acceleration. Well, that doesn't make any sense.
Doesn't make any sense. That's why I keep going...
I think I know what it is. I think when people use just percent changes...
That's what I'm doing. I'm using just a percent change.
Then divide by the number of years or months. I think what you need to use instead is a geometric mean. Whenever you have compounding and you use these arithmetic means...
Yeah.
An arithmetic mean is just you used to add things up and divide by the number of periods.
Well, I'm hoping it's not going senile or something. You know, it's not...
Yeah, I think what it is people make this mistake all the time. And it's not a mistake when there's low volatility in something. When there's low volatility in something and the rates are low, the arithmetic mean and the geometric mean are the same. So if there's that big of a discrepancy, I would say it's just a matter of switching to the geometric mean. I think if you did that, it would make more sense.
Well, I'll give you the raw numbers. In December 2000, the money's M2, now I'm talking about, was $4.9 trillion. December 2008, it was 8.2.
Yeah.
So that's 66% up. In 8 years, and so that comes out to, if you divide that by 8, you're talking 8.3%, right?
Yeah.
So December 2008, we're 8.2 trillion. December 2020, we're 19.1. So it's up 133%.
Yeah.
Whenever
I calculate averages, I'll do the arithmetic mean, and then I'll compare it to the geometric mean, and I'll usually end up with the geometric mean because. Again, there's compounding in these time series.
Well, anyway, the December and the 2020 numbers. So, in that period of time, for God's sake, we doubled in a half. For God's sake. Yeah.
Well, you know, I haven't done my latest calculation on what I think M2 might be next year. I got this. I've been tracking this quadratic trend, and it seems to be holding. I've been tracking it for about a year now, and every time I check it. It might flatten. The trend might flatten a little bit.
It did last month.
Last time I did it, I had next year's, you know, in a year's time, if the trend continues, I had year-over-year inflation at about 8-9%.
That's where I've got it. Well, yeah. I've got in the last few months, we went up to the trend. 1 month we were up 7%. Now, last month we dropped a little. But if you look at the last 2 or 3 months, we're in the low sixes, low to mid-sixes.
Yeah, that's what I have it at.
But that's inflationary. That's not.
Oh yeah, it is.
It's not. I mean, that's not.
And I don't think there's much the Fed can do because I think a lot of this inflation comes from the new model we have. I mean,
they have to fight it. And they're not fighting it hard enough.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if there is a way to fight it with their current set of tools and the way they use it.
They still got how many $1 trillion in the balance sheet? Let it off faster. Sell some of it.
Well, I think the way they have to do it now is to keep the lending in the banking system. I think what they have to do is they have to raise the federal funds rate. They have to raise that.
That's what they're lowering.
Yeah, I know they're lowering it, yeah. So the only way they can keep those reserves in the banking system is by making the dam taller. So if you make the dam taller by raising the federal funds rate, with all this money that's pouring in, it's like snow melt, right? Out west we have... snow melt. Rivers out west run clean and cold in July because it's coming off a glacier. It's coming off a snow that's hidden from the sun on the north side of the mountain, right? So the only way to keep that from overflowing into the economy is inflation. I think what the Fed has to do is it has to raise the federal funds rate.
How about you can say you weren't on the air when I said
but
this.
But here's the interesting thing, though. I think there's always going to be leakage out of that dam in our current dynamic because the wealthy people, the people that really benefit from inflation, the property owners, the people who own assets that are appreciating,
like presidents that own golf clubs and stuff.
Yeah. You know, the whole club is going to be able to still get loans, and the people that are going to be squeezed off from those loans. Are people in the bottom probably 80%. I think the people in the top 20% are going to have access to credit even if the federal funds rate is raised. So the banks are going to make those loans. Those people have assets and they can liquefy them. They have liquidity.
What about something every week you talk about the credit stuff? Okay, so one of the spots, there's three areas that I'm sort of concerned with. I am, because that's you and I are. You're a closet monetarist, so you don't admit it, but at least I say I am.
I'm a pragmatic Austrian, which kind of puts me
in the closet with a monetarist. That's where where we all are now. We're all in the closet. We're not.
Well, I recognize that the Fed is going to be here, and it's not going anywhere. And you know, no matter what I want, it's not going to happen. So I have to be pragmatic, right?
Well, what about something totally blasphemous, in like raising the reserve requirement back to 10% when it used to be 20, or at least 5 or something? And I would, even in my industry, you know, it might destroy some of the firms in my industry, but so what, as far as I'm concerned?
I think the Fed kind of, this is just me thinking out loud, me thinking about this a lot. I don't really think in our current system with the federal funds rate and the interest on reserves, which are essentially the same thing now, numerically, the way the whole system's run, if they want more reserves, they have to raise the federal funds rate and the interest on reserves rate, which they raise together. If they want more reserves pouring out, they lower those two rates. Yeah, so I don't think reserve requirements actually matter anymore.
Well, they would if they were allowed to.
But, well, I think
you got so much money in the system that they're kicking money back to the Fed. That means there's too much in there. That's why we're getting inflation.
Well, that's because of all this history, right?
Well, you can't even absorb it. But here's my other two things. We're almost at the point when you see what the market's doing, and the margin loans went up $50 billion a month for the last 3 months.
Yeah.
I would raise the initial margin on a lot of these stocks to 55 or 60 instead of 50.
Yeah.
I want to love your opinion on this, please.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah.
I am amazingly concerned on the amount of margin now that's going into cryptocurrencies. I think that's a bomb waiting to go off. And
I think Carl's right in suggesting that.
Wait a minute, Carl's right.
We don't know the extent of it.
The number. Yeah.
The Bitcoin margin. I don't think. The
estimates are somewhere around $60 billion. I think it's way more than that.
Yeah.
But that's. There's, as a matter of fact, I'll kick it up here, because there's two kinds
If everyday people can use credit cards to buy Bitcoin, it's a lot more than we think it is.
By the way, you know, I saw my first Bitcoin machine last week in this gas station. You ever seen one of those?
I've never seen one of those.
It's a beautiful machine.
Yeah. I can imagine.
It'll let you pay some of your bills out of there.
Yeah, yeah.
I actually looked to buy one of those things like 10 years ago or 6. And the weird part is, they're such a good machine. If Bitcoin goes the way of the dodo bird, you can use them as an ATM. I mean, I've been over there.
It's kind of like what, you know, I'm watching the origin stories of Yellowstone, 1923 now?
Yeah.
And they're walking through town after riding their horses and trying to park them on the street, and there's no more hitching posts anymore because all their, you know, their streets are lined with cars. They're walking up down the streets of the town, Bozeman, and they like looking at the telephone booth and going, "What is that thing?"
Were you ever in Bozeman?
Oh yeah, Bozeman's a cool town. Yeah, it definitely feels like an old time mining town.
Oh, I mean,
to this day, it still feels like that.
We went up there. We skied at Big Sky 1 year, so we drive my old Jeep, my 73 wagon here. We drive it up there, and we went along the north.
What year was it?
Oh, God.
That you drove that up there?
It had to be late 70s, early 80s. Might have been.
Oh, okay, yeah, that makes sense.
They claim I should know this, I'm bringing it up. Something called decentralized finance, DeFi. This sector is open, borrows on protocols like Aave and Compound. This is for cryptocurrency. Reached an all-time high of $26 billion. In quarter two of 2025. Then there's something called centralized finance, whatever that, God bless, you're the professor, you better know this shit. Centralized finance, the open borrows on centralized lending venues were tracked at $18 billion at the end of quarter two. Then collateralized debt positions, which includes crypto-backed stable coins like DAI, accounted for another $9 billion. So these guys, this is an AI overview, claims are up to $53 billion. I'm going to take the over on that. But I don't mean, I don't, it's not.
Well, then you had all the activity internationally. I don't know.
Well, and then you have people that have, I've heard of people that have taken out a second mortgage and buy Bitcoin. So far, they're happy.
But you were saying in Europe, when you go to a bank, you can use, the banks can, they don't have to stick with just like debt. They can use money, reserves to buy stocks and stuff. So
what I said was in Europe, stock, and I don't know if it's every little company, but stock in a company is considered good capital for the bank. Same way in Japan, and it's not here. Actually, I think the only one here that ever was considered good capital, talk about things not working out, was Fannie and Freddie Preferred. I think that was considered good capital for a bank, and it went out worthless, didn't it?
Yeah.
So I mean, the one, but no, you can if you, when we were lecturing over in Europe, first of all, everybody trading is working for somebody else, which I found disgusting. Well, now of course every trade's working for somebody else here, right? Which I find disgusting. But the not everybody, but just about. And so the banks own something like 80% of the stocks, the shares in stocks. These guys are making option markets, and I go, you're doing what? But you know what? The bank told you to do it. You know what's even weirder? We're talking about wacky stories. Is the guys are showing me their position, guys and ladies, and maybe they're short 1,000 of these calls or long 1,000 of these calls, and yet their markets are like 10 up. Hmm. And I go, how the hell did you ever get 1,500 contracts in this company that, by the way, is owned 80% by one bank? How did you get that position when you're trading 10 lots? Oh, no, we got a deal here where, even though you could be 10 up, now imagine this on our exchanges here, because it's getting like this, or it's almost is kind of like this. If they call up and say they want a price on a 1,000 lot, we give it to them, and we could trade them, and we just let the exchange know. I said, wait a minute, it comes out of the auction market. It used to be the open outcry. It's like trading, making a trade in the IBM pit, 40 yards away from IBM, and come back and say, look what we just did. Mm-hmm. To me, that was reckless. But now, that's okay. Why should everybody see what we did? Here, we can do that all the time. We go to a different exchange and trade it there.
Yeah.
But all the bad stuff that I saw over there, and all on the way back in a plane, I'm thinking about, hell, God, I hope this doesn't follow me over here on this plane, and it sure as hell did. Everything that was good about our market, they didn't have, and now we're almost all like them.
Yeah.
But well, we still don't have. A bank here can't buy General Motors and have it be good capital. We still can't do that.
Well, you know, I was watching that series, 1923. It's really good. It's with that British actress and the guy that played Han Solo, Harrison Ford.
Oh yeah,
really good show. But there's a Italian guy, an immigrant, that's working with the heir of the Dutton Ranch. He's been killing lions, and this Italian guy on the ship, they're working for their fare to get back to the United States. This Italian immigrant looks at this kid, Spencer Dutton, and he says, there are two kinds of people in this world, the makers and then the takers. And the makers are the productive class, and the takers are the ones that are they're the ones that rob, steal, or they're the ones that use their money and power to dictate policy, to take more and more and more from the makers. And I think there's two groups of people. I think the two groups of people in the United States are, there are people who want to restore our founding principles, and there's others who want to turn us into Europe. And there's been this battle raging for over 100 years to push us into a European-style government, where we're always involved.
Well, they're winning.
Yeah. I think they are, yeah.
There's no question about that.
That's where this impetus to be constantly at war comes from.
Why?
That's what Europe is, right? Europe has got 1,000-plus years of just constant war.
Why?
They have a war called the 100 Years War.
Yeah. Right? Why do you... Well, first of all, are you in the camp that is... we had World War One and World War Two, or are you in the camp that says we had one war, we just had a break in the middle?
Well, I'm in the camp where these wars are all a continuation. Like, for example, I was reading Laura Ingalls Wilder's book this summer. Not Laura Ingalls Wilder's book, her daughter's book, Rose Wilder Lane. She wrote this book called The Discovery of Freedom. And it was fascinating because in it, you learn that the Industrial Revolution was actually an extension of the American Revolution. They're the same revolution. So World War One, World War Two, all that is just one big long war. One big long European war. And the European wars just last decades and
some last centuries. Why, when everybody in this country has any kind of criticism for our current system, you're immediately branded as a socialist, even though you're not?
Well, that's because they want to silence the debate. They don't want to have a discussion. They don't want to have a...
Why doesn't anybody bring up the word plutocracy?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we should talk about it.
That's what we are, right?
Yeah.
For those that don't know, I'll get to
that. I actually think that the current system we're living in is really just an illusion. We have this illusion of freedom. And as long as we, don't notice too much or say too much, we can prosper. If we say too much, we can be ended economically. When you read the news.
Well, here, plutocracy. It's a noun meaning government by the wealthy. A country or society governed by the wealthy. No one can accept the public policies which turn a democracy into a plutocracy, but we are one. An elite or ruling class of people whose power derives from their wealth, and not only that, their control of all the newspapers and all the other stuff, which is
it's an illusion. You were talking about this with Kenny. Yeah. You don't watch the news. Well, if you watch the news, whether you watch Fox and Newsmax or CNN, MSNBC, or whatnot, you have the two groups, right? And what's the purpose of that news? It's to divide Americans.
And the people with money are taking the idea of a John D. Rockefeller buying the newspaper. I don't think even he could have got away with that. But now, what's the problem with that? He gets control of the news.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you got Bezos owning the Washington Post, Yeah.
Well, and you got, this idea that YouTube gave Trump $25 million, I can't even, that boggles my mind. Why doesn't anybody think there's something wrong with that?
Well, YouTube, I don't think YouTube is, I think YouTube's pretty, YouTube and Google are pretty pro-state.
I'm saying, but have you ever heard of a president that sues all these other places?
I think Google giving Trump $25 million, I mean, what is that for his library or something? I think that's just to keep him at bay.
Does anybody have a problem with that?
Oh, I have a problem with it, yeah. But Google, that's not a new thing for Google. Google to me, has been silencing voices for
at least
15 years.
But this whole kind of,
They're not conservative. They're not progressive voices. Let's just say that. Google Chrome, when I do a Google Chrome search, the results of the Google Chrome search or its AI, it doesn't feel like it's anti-progressive at all. It actually feels like it's way biased toward the progressive side. So I try to use several different AIs to find new sources.
What do you say we go for a quick break since didn't want to do earlier? SP Futures down 9, NASDAQ is down 18. We're down a little more, but we can't seem to stay down. We got this, I don't know what's going on with this shutdown. My guess is after a day or two, we'll push it off like we have, but then that would just be a guess. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jacks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Ricky on the board. Democrats should do the right thing, says Speaker Johnson. God, these guys are unbelievable. The Dow futures down 60. I don't see anything moving all that much. We got a Home Depot down $1.80. Home Depot has been down with the last couple of days, which is kind of bizarre. Visa's up 384. Again, not a whole lot happening. We're probably not going to do much until we figure out what these guys are going to do in the next couple of days. But then again, who knows? We'll probably move just to prove me wrong. Over in Europe, DAX up 37.1%, FTSE up 12.1%, CAC around down 18.2%, so I'm going to say we're slightly up, but not much. Over in Asia, The Nikkei down 111.2%. Hang Seng up 232. That's 0.90. Chinese stocks just going up, up, up. Shanghai up 20.5%. As Russell said last week, they're trying every way they can to put money in the market, and whatever it is, whatever they're having, they're throwing into the fight. Bonds unchanged, 2.72. Wait a minute, where are we? We're U.S. 10-year unchanged at 4.12. The Bund is unchanged at 2.72. We've got oil down $1.14, 62.31. It looked like it might break out. It got up to 65, and now it's right back under 63. So right now, well, if you could have traded the last however many months, buy it at 62, sell it at 65. But the only problem is you can't trade the last 6 months. Gold down $13, 38.41, still way above 3,800. Silver down 71 cents, but still 46.30. It's still high. Foreign exchange. Euro is back over 117. Dollar dented as investors grow twitchy. Twitchy. Is that you, Ricky? Twitchy? Over threat of U.S. shutdown. I don't even know what that means. That are twitchy. British pound, 134.4. Again, the trade kind of has been the euro versus the pound. It's been interesting. Crypto, down 908, 113, 281. What do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports, big games today, big games.
Morning shift is currently 7:39 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. We got 68 degrees right now with a high of 78. Warm with plenty of sunshine. A nice afternoon for baseball indeed. Tonight, increasing cloudiness with a low of 64 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 74 degrees right now with a high of 97. Warm with plenty of sun. Tonight, clear with a low of 72 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, Emma Kennedy from Monroe's, 30 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook, 53 minutes. Inbound Eisenhower from Wall, 52 minutes. Dan Ryan from 95th, 31 minutes. And lastly, Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 45 minutes. Lastly, very quick sports. MLB, no games yesterday. Today we got Padres at Cubs at 2 p.m. Back over to you, Chief.
The Tyreek Hill last night, dislocated knee.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I forgot about that.
Tyreek Hill. That was a great ball player.
Did everybody see the video? It was pretty gnarly.
Yeah, I don't want to watch the video. I saw the play.
I don't want to see that. That'll bring me back to me when I did that when I was 28 playing basketball in a pickup game.
Oh, my God.
And my cousin, he looked more like a Viking with a big beard. He didn't like me dunking on him. I dunked on him like three times in a row, and it was a 9.5-foot rim. And he gave me a forearm shiver in my gut, and I go flying from at the rim to landing in the grass, and it was like a 2-foot graceful slope down. I got shoved into the grass. My left knee touched the ground, and it just snapped.
Oh,
yeah, it was crooked. My left shin was pointing eastward. It was bad.
Oh God. Well, you're all right now.
I would say since then I've played maybe about 3 hours of basketball since then.
Yeah,
well, and I used to love to ball.
Yeah, I used to play. Got 4 or 5 nights a week in the wintertime.
Yeah, my brother Rod and I would play 4 hours a night, 7 days a week when we were in our teens and twenties after high school.
Well, the parish church, the original church was a Quonset hut, right?
Yeah.
So then when they got a real church, they made the Quonset hut the basketball court.
Oh yeah.
So can you imagine in this day and age, where I just call the police, the priest, and he'd give me the key, and I dropped the key in the mailbox, and we left, and 8 of us would tend to go in on a Sunday night and play for 2 hours. Can you imagine anybody?
Well, we had a boys and girls club in Lewiston, Idaho, and at night after the kids left, they would open it up for open gym, or there'd be open gym at Washington State University on one of the student rec centers where you could just walk in.
Yeah.
There were no ID checks, or you could play ball at Lewis Clark State College's gym. You know, there were a lot of places.
Well, Montgomery Park had a real nice court, and left, there wasn't leagues, but they probably played in 3 leagues, and maybe we had the gym 2 nights a week on our own.
Well, every Mormon church has a gymnasium that is the extension from their main meeting hall. So we'd find gyms there, you know.
What was, speaking of Mormon churches, this guy that we don't see too much about the shooter in Michigan, because evidently he had a Trump for President bump sticker or something, and was wearing a MAGA shirt. What is everybody's why are people mad at the Mormons now? Why are these people? How do they even? Why would anybody go shoot up some church?
I grew up Mormon. I would say I'm not Mormon now, but I grew up Mormon. I grew up in Idaho. The stars came with the Mormon migration from Yorkshire County, Yorkshire, England. They moved to, I think, Ohio, and then they moved off on to Utah when
they were in Illinois for a while. It was
they were in Illinois for a while.
Upstate New York and Illinois. They got persecuted all the way.
There's still snars in Ohio. Still snars in Ohio that I have never met. But we came, you know, my people came, the Holmgrens came to Utah in the mid-1800s. So I grew up Mormon. I grew up going to Mormon church. And there's not a nicer people that you'll ever meet. Now, some of them, you know, some of them will use it as a way to do business. You know, hey, I'm...
Oh, there's a lot of that. A lot of that.
Yeah. Yeah. So...
I was actually in the temple once.
Yeah. Utah is... I think Utah leads the nation in white-collar crime. Because I think of the, you know, the business, you know, using the church and influence, and because it's a voluntary priesthood, right? So you have all these people working for free in their priesthood, you know, the wards and stuff. So, you know, but they're the as a whole, they're just the nicest people in the world, and I don't understand why you'd want to shoot them.
Well, the guy a couple months ago shot up the Catholic Church, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, what is? I don't. We got to get everybody working, for God's sake.
So I mean, the thing about Christ's message is love thy neighbor, right? I mean, how do you go to war with people who love their neighbor, right? It just doesn't.
I can't think of this whole thing of how many people are out there. They have all these. I don't know. I know I ran about.
I think Kirk's death had more to do with his preaching. I mean, he became pretty evangelical. When you watch his events,
but, you know what? He's pretty evangelical. I know, but what? I mean, I know. I didn't agree with him on a couple things, but I don't.
Yeah, I think it was more of his Christianity than anything else. Honestly,
the only thing I find weird about the I never heard anybody make this actual statement that somebody who's so for guns. I've never heard anybody of that, and I'd say the guy had a massive following. I don't know if anybody ever said anything, and again, I think that guy and I, if we ever would have met, would have been friends.
Charlie was a nice guy. There's a
lot alike between the people on this show and him. He's not afraid to speak his mind. He's not afraid to talk to people of a different... I mean, duh. If I was afraid to talk to people who disagree with me, what about all the people on his show?
I mean, I think if you look at a lot of his videos, there are a couple situations where the person he invites to the mic gets kind of aggressive in the dialogue, and I think Charlie kind of tended to bite back maybe more than I would have.
Well, that's okay. Yeah. But I mean, yeah.
He wasn't hitting anybody. He wasn't throwing bricks at anybody.
To me, that's, and you know what? He's only 31. Some of the stuff that he might have changed. The thing I think he would have mellowed out on,
I think he was really mellow once his kids came.
But I mean, I hope there is a heaven, and I hope he's there. But I wonder if he would want to take back the line where, if you're going to have a free society with people having guns, you got to put up with somebody getting shot once in a while. Well, that's an interesting statement, except if it's you.
Well, you know, but I think Charlie was sincere in his...
I think he was very sincere in that. I'm just saying, to me, I'm not willing to pay that price. I'm not willing to have...
For a guy like Charlie, who's really sincere about his faith, I don't think he feared death at all.
Okay.
I don't think he did. And that's the thing about evangelicals who believe they are...
Name me a 31-year-old male that ever did.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, you know, I did. I did.
Well, because you were in the Navy.
Yeah.
I mean, you saw stuff could happen all the time. I mean, how many times? I mean, this has nothing to do with him. How many times?
My brother Rod probably feared it because both my parents died in their 50s, and I think Rod's kind of lived a reckless life because he felt like, why worry about it if you're going to die in your 50s? So.
I kind of wish I knew more about this guy when he was alive. I would have loved to listen to him.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is, you watch. The guy's going to live forever because his YouTube videos are pretty interesting. I mean, if you just like watching people exchange ideas, his YouTube videos are really fun to watch because you got people who are hostile to his point of view, and they consider his point of view hostile to them, and they're having exchanges.
I would have... the two things that I would... All 90% of what the guy said I agree with. I would have... But then again, it's everybody. I would have debated him seriously on the gun control issue, and I would have debated him. I think he was a little hard on the gays, and I have a different kind of...
I don't think there was any hate in his heart for them. I think what it is he just didn't agree with I guess the lifestyle. I don't know. And why if you don't agree with, if you don't bless somebody's lifestyle choices, why should that person care what you have to say? I don't care about what people think of my lifestyle choices. I honestly don't. I don't understand how it's offensive when somebody doesn't affirm your way of life, the way you look at the world. I don't understand that. I don't care if people affirm my life or my choices. I just don't.
No, why would you?
Yeah, I just don't understand why that matters, right?
Well, I mean, a lot of ladies that I know, a lot of people on the trading floor and so forth, a lot of ladies that have chosen the other lifestyle, a sack of them were absolutely abused as 9 and 10 year olds by uncles or neighbors or something.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you got to be careful when you start criticizing when somebody has that happen to them.
Well, but I don't think he was criticizing those.
No, I'm not saying he was. I'm just saying, you got. I mean, I don't think people choose that. I mean, people are what they are. I don't know. You know.
To each their own. If you want to live a certain way, that's cool.
But
let me live my way.
I'm trying not to be crude here, but if a couple walks down the sidewalk. And I happen to look, immediately I focus on the girls behind and not the guys. I don't choose that. I mean, I don't have time to make that determination. I don't choose that. It's just, but what if it was the other way?
Thing about that, I was mentioning this in a group of veterans. I'm in this group where veterans are getting together to talk, and you know, the funny thing that you say about that, because it came up on Friday morning, and the Navy sexualizes 18, 19-year-old men. I mean, what does the Navy do? It takes them to a foreign port where everything can be purchased. Everything purchased. And 18, 19-year-old men who aren't allowed to drink in the United States, all of a sudden they're in a place where
I can't even imagine.
As much as they want. And it's hard. It's that right there, that mindset is really hard for me to kind of like flush out of my personality. I mean, it's just, it was formative. I was 18, 19, 20 years old when I'm in these foreign ports. And I mean, it's free market, seriously.
Well, plus,
it's free market in those ports.
You know, if it's a war going on, you think you're only going to last a week, so you might as well do what you have to do or whatever you think you need.
Yeah,
to.
I mean, it's even worse for the Marines and the Army, the guys in the Army, because. You know, Navy guys, we're, you know, hundreds of miles away from the theater, where these guys are right in the theater. So I can imagine that being much stronger in them than us.
What was the sometimes you don't even realize the backdrop to some of this stuff. I mean, I watched the old ones of 12 O'Clock High once in a while. What was the movie with George Peppard and Ursula Andress? Well, you remember it because she was in it.
Well, I love George Peppard, but yeah, I don't.
What was the movie where he was the World War One pilot, and the German.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that one. But my favorite one is The Sand Pebbles with Steve McQueen.
But I'm saying when you watch it, all you're doing is watching the planes in the air, which is really something.
Yeah.
The Blue Max was the name of it.
I'm going to watch it.
The movie was when they're in the air, you know, the flying was absolutely spectacular.
Yeah,
and of course, every time Ursula Andress comes on the screen, you can't not look at that. But now when you go, if you watched it again, like 30 years later, I'd watch it and go, no wonder these guys are drinking every night. Every day, somebody doesn't come back.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It's like, you know, the stress when you see like 12 O'Clock High, and then you see the statistics. World War II, of how many people in these B-17s didn't come back? Every day, 50 planes went up and 40 came back. You know, I mean, it's like...
Yeah, my Aunt Shelley's dad was in the Stalag, I think Stalag 17 or whatever it was, the one that was made famous by the movie. And then the one that Hogan's Heroes was loosely based off of, he was in that because he was in the plane that got shut down. They were bombing. I think they're doing a bombing run or something. And he got shot down and he had a parachute out.
Oh, I mean, the stuff these people went through.
And he never talked about it. Edsel never talked about it.
Did you? I did it yesterday, but it's worth a little bit day two. Did you read all about this guy who died this weekend? The last member of the Tuskegee Airmen, the originals.
Oh yeah.
I mean,
I don't want to read that because I'll just cry.
Well, you know, you damn near do it. Because I was reading it and I'm
talking about all the
those guys are just tough dudes.
Well, they
went through.
I mean, I've been on this little bit of a bitch streak about all these people that run around shooting people and everybody. They all seem to be a bunch of white guys, and I don't know what the story is with that, but they all have like nothing to do except sit around and hate people all day long, and then they run around and shoot. This guy was 19, and he ended up, you know, fighter pilot. He went to Europe. He's near. He was at the tail end of the war there, but he ended up something like 19 missions. He did World War II, and then he went. He was fortunate enough to be born in the North and not the South. So the GI Bill covered him. It covered black people as well as white people. It didn't cover women, which is bizarre, but it didn't. And he was able to actually go to school. He went to NYU. Or if you're in the South, I think he probably could have gone to Grambling or one of those places, but you sure as hell couldn't have gone to Alabama or Georgia because they didn't let blacks in, right?
Yeah.
And plus, it helped you out with your mortgages, and I don't think people in the South, did the banks even give mortgages to blacks? I'm tending to think they didn't, but I don't know. So anyway, the guy, Korea shows up. He goes back in. He flies 45 missions in Korea. Mm. Then he flies 75 in Vietnam.
Wow.
So I'm like, what the hell? Talk about stones.
Yeah.
And then he was...
They didn't make a movie about that guy, man.
No.
I'd go watch it.
Oh, God. And then he ended up, you know, helping all the other people out from the people, the families of the people who were in that group and so forth. I guess it was a really tightly knit group. I got to believe that any sort of group where you trained to be pilots together and went and fought together, I got to believe no matter who's in that group, it becomes pretty tight. It has to. How could it not?
Well, when you're on a ship and, you know, you're going through the Persian Gulf and the seawater is 93 degrees and the distilling plant's broke and your job is to fix it, but you don't have any repair parts because you've been out at sea for 30 days straight. The whole ship's
wait a minute,
like,
the Ace Hardware ship doesn't pull up?
We didn't have 3D printing machines back then, you know. But, you know, the cooks are sweating on the griddle because it's 120 degrees in the cook space in the galley, whatever. And you know, you're in that together, and it just creates these bonds that are unbreakable. And some of the guys that I was on the ship with are probably, I'm probably closer to them than my own brothers. My brothers and I are really close because we were in it together with my parents' abusive relationship. You know, fortunately got a divorce, but it just builds these ties that I think they're hard to break.
One of the guy who was the plant engineer at Pullman, PCW1, where the Walmart is now, Indian dude named Sudhir Gopinath. Nicest guy. Back in the day when you didn't have computers and stuff, I was always able to just kind of wander around and sit in and talk to these guys. Nobody knew where I was, right? I was pretty good at that. And he would tell me, he goes, and his background was he was an engineer on a ship, you know, a freighter of some kind. Oh, Tom, there's no hardware store out there. You can't call somebody for a part. You just got to fix it. You just got to fix it. But and I said to him, somehow or another, we got to talk. Somebody in the place was getting married or something. Did I ever tell you? I met my wife on a Friday night, and I proposed on Saturday or on Sunday. And she says to me, and she was kind of put off by that. And I said, well, if you're afraid, she goes, I'm not afraid of anything. I'm in. He goes, it's three kids. She goes, we've never had a fight. Because it was, I just saw her, talked to her, I go, this is it. And she goes, okay. You know, and what an amazing story, huh? Because we've never had a fight. He goes, I just knew right away by the way she acted and the way she talked, she was it. And she goes, okay. And he was a terrific dude. I mean, just as nice as could be. But he did odd stuff where he came up with this.
What year was this?
God, this is the late 70s.
Late 70s.
And he came up Pullman.
He was on a ship during the Vietnam War. Or?
He was on a freighter somewhere coming in out of India, I think.
Oh, wow.
And the cost of electricity in Chicago because of the nuclear stuff back when we were kind of overcharged, you get stuff at night really, really cheap. So PCW1 was this plant that had to be 100 years old, nothing but windows, nothing insulated, to try and keep the place even at 50 degrees in the wintertime was tough. So he came, he wanted to buy, he gave this presentation for an electric furnace, and everybody's going, what is this guy talking about? He must be an idiot. Of course, I went through all the numbers, and there was nothing there that I could complain about. I was the guy who did all the, you know, the what do they call the requests for expenditures, RFEs, they call them. He wanted to buy this huge electric boiler. And everybody's going, what do you mean? He goes, we'll run this at night. We'll get the place up to 55. And with the sun coming in, we can turn it off. He goes, the electric at night, they're giving it away.
Yeah.
And everybody looked at it. Even though everybody came in there thinking it was the dumbest idea, everybody voted yes. Oh, yes. he's turned. it would made absolutely no sense until you read it. And all of a sudden, yeah. You go, wow, it's pretty smart.
Well, back then, very few people were up at night, right?
Well, the place, what the hell's the name of it? It was a place Blagojevich had. They were there forever. They make stamping dies. You know what stamping dies are?
Yeah.
Well, mm-hmm. I mean, they pound basically the crap out of a hunk of steel until you got to etch it in a whole bit. Well, they had this guy at the end of World War II. I'll think of the name of the place in a minute. They were right by me. But he bought a massive press over in Germany after the war. He took it all apart and shipped it over here and put it all back together. It was for stamping dies. But they would actually make their own steel. They had a blast furnace there, a small blast furnace.
Hmm.
And when you went by at night, you could see it only worked at night because they could get so... It was an electric blast furnace.
Wow.
Because they got the power from Commonwealth Edison so late at night, and they had to shut off at like 5:30 because the power went way up.
Yeah, I think that's just a different dynamic than natural gas, right?
Normally you use coke and coal. You use coke and coal for that, but there was coal in there, but they use the electric to power the damn thing.
Yep. Because the demand is really low at night, right?
So, what's your prediction? We're at 8 o'clock here. What's your prediction on this stoppage in government? I'm going to say 3 days, and they kick it to November.
I think the Democrats are in a no-win situation because they want to shut down, but. They want to shut down because they want certain things. They want to look strong. They don't want to look like they did when they extended it back in the winter. Then, you know, what was it, February? They don't want to look weak. So they want to shut down. But the Republicans we have a shutdown. The Republicans are going to probably build support because Republican voters, Libertarian voters, are probably going to say, "Yeah, go ahead and shut down the government." The federal workers that are going to be laid off, they're more than likely, you know, on average, probably progressive or Democrat. So I think the Republicans gain.
They're all going to get paid. They're all going to get paid anyway.
I know they're going to get paid, but, you know, the news media is, they're not going to get paid until they come back to work, right?
This whole thing where we're trying to pick out whose voters is where.
To me, it's just theater.
You never know. What?
It's theater.
It's not really. We'll talk about next. It's not really theater because they're spending way more money than they thought. The tariffs, even though they're screwing everybody with the tariffs by taxing them. The fact is, they're coming in about half as much as he thought. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the budget, the deficit is growing by the month.
Well, I just looked at the, I'm taking it for a grain of salt, but you look at Q2 tax receipt growth, it is up 9.3%. And then Q2 federal expenditures, it's up 7.8%. So, I'm not sure what's going on there. Seems like...
Well, that's what I'm saying. This guy's telling you he's cutting back. They're laying people off. Fact is, how much is he spending today to get 400 generals in one spot? What's that going to be? They're going to learn a salute or what?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, whatever. What are we talking about? The new warrior ethos. What does that even mean?
Well, I think what it is in the previous 4 years, the focus of the Department of Defense wasn't on the mission of the Department of Defense. And I think they just want to get back to.
But
I mean, there was a lot
does
of.
Does he? Does everybody forget that he was in office the 4 years before that?
Well, I mean, I know the previous 4 year period of time, the focus wasn't on the mission of the Department of Defense.
What is the mission?
Well, I think the mission of the Department of Defense is, you know, to me, the
Department
of
War. Department of War.
Yeah, no. Department of War. Now, so you know, to me personally. I think it should be much, much, much smaller. And the contracting is a problem.
Well, I know, but that's going to be your. We got a dash, but I know, I'm with you on that too. But anyway, S&P futures down 6, NASDAQ futures only down 7. So we're coming back up like we always do. Bye, the dip. I'll talk to you next week, buddy.
Okay.
Have a nice week. Have a nice weekend. And,
you
too. We're playing your who's your team down there? What's your college you're closest to? Do you have a?
Well, I'm a Washington State. University Cougar, and ever since the Pac-12 kind of fell apart.
You guys the Pac-2 now or what?
Well, we're the Tupac.
Oh, God. On that note, back tomorrow, Starks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.